fresh air, and I'm enjoying teaching because I really feel like this is a word. This has been a series to help set up our new year. Series to help get us established, a series to help get our feet set, a series to help get our mind focused on what it is that God wants to do in the new year. We're just 21 days into 2018. It's still very fresh, still very new. You've been fasting. You've been turning away from other things. We just have 7 days left in our fast. I hope you'll push through. I hope you will say, you know what, I'm going to make these 7 days a great 7 days. If you haven't had an opportunity to join us or to be a part of our 21-day fast, you can jump in on these last 7 days and say, you know what, I'm going to give up social media, or I'm going to turn off the TV, or I'm going to give up desserts, or I'm going to just leave food alone. I'm going to fast something because I am wanting God to do something great in my new year, wanting God to do some big things in my life. Because the reality is, what we've been talking about and teaching about is how easily we can get stuck, how easily we can sort of get in this no man's land where there is no wind blowing, there is no fresh air blowing. We've talked about the doldrums and talked about those boats many years ago before there were motorized boats and vessels. They depended on the wind in their sails, but when they got into that doldrums place, when they got into that place where there was no wind, they literally could not get out, and many of them died there. They lost their lives there because they could not propel themselves out. There was nothing to move them out of that place, and that is certainly not what we want for you. We want to be able to move you. We want you to be able to feel the fresh wind of God, the fresh air blowing in your life that will propel you into the destiny that God has for you. So week one, we talked about the choice, and then last Sunday, we talked about our attitude and how our attitude plays a part in whether or not we have fresh air in our lives. Today, I want to talk about something very sacred. I want to talk about something very important to you. I want to talk about something that is probably going to challenge you, and that is our schedules. Our schedules. You say, Pastor Darrell, this is really spiritual. We've talked about choices. We've talked about attitudes, and now we're going to talk about our schedules. I mean, isn't there some Old Testament, you know, principles somewhere? Shouldn't we be talking about Melchizedek today? No, I need to talk about real life, because your schedule is affecting your spiritual life. Your schedule is playing a part in how God is able to speak to you and how God is able to help you. I can't speak for the rest of my family, but I feel like the last few weeks I am unwinding. There's just something about being in God's will. There's something about being in God's purpose since we have moved here, even though we're in temporary housing right now, even though we have a pod that is completely full front to back, top to bottom, somewhere in Georgia. I don't even know exactly where it is. It's locked up tight. Do we have a key to that thing? I think there's a pad. I don't even know where the key is. I'm telling you, I don't even know. But I feel like I'm unwinding because I'm where God wants me to be. But one of the reasons that I'm unwinding is because I'm not setting in 2 hours worth of traffic every day. It's not taking me 45 minutes to get from home to the church. It's not. There's just something very relaxing, something very at peace about getting your schedule to line up with God's plan and God's purpose for your life. Here's the verse we've been reading each week, Deuteronomy chapter 30 and verse 19. He says, "This day I call heaven and earth as witnesses against you that I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses." Now, here's what I want you to do. I want you to choose life. You have all of these choices in front of you. You have the choice of life. You have the choice of death. You have the choice of blessings. You have the choice of curses. But I want you to choose life. And so we're taking inventory. How are we spending our time? What choice are we making? If I were to look at your schedule, if I were to look at your calendar, if I were to get a printout of everything that you do all week long, I'm sure that any one of you, myself included, could say, man, I'm doing this good thing and that good thing, and I'm involved in this, I'm involved in that, and I'm going here and I'm going there. And at the end of the day, I'm so exhausted. But have we left any time for God to move and to work in our lives? Have we left any time for God to communicate with us and for us to communicate with God? Here's how the average American will spend their time. You know, we'll eat out as average Americans 14,411 times. That includes 1,811 trips to McDonald's. Whew, that good balanced meal. We will spend 13 years and 4 months watching TV. This is just the average life. 13 years and 4 months watching TV. You will spend 5 years waiting in lines. That's what it accumulates. That's what it adds up to in the average life. 5 years waiting in lines. You'll spend 1 year looking for misplaced items. Unless your name is Kristen Hooper, then it's more like 10 years. And Elle is my witness, because we spend a lot of time looking for her misplaced items, so we're even above average in that regard. We'll attend 35 weddings in an average life, and we will drive 627,000 miles. Drive 627,000. That's how we spend our time. When you think about it, you know what? If I live an average of 75 or 80 years or 85 years, to think that I gave 5 of those years to waiting in line. I don't know anyone who gets to the end of their life who wishes they would have done more of these. I don't know anyone that gets, I've never sat with anyone who was at the point of death. I've never sat with anyone who was terminal. I've never sat with someone who knew their days were down to hours and hours were down to minutes, who said, you know what, I wish I would have spent more time driving my car. I wish I would have gone to McDonald's one more time. I wish I would have waited in another line. No one wishes they would have done those things, but everyone finds themselves wishing they would have done the right things, the fulfilling things, the things that were strengthening, the things that were a blessing to their lives. In just a moment, we're going to read from Daniel chapter 5, and I want to give you a little setup here as far as what is happening in this story. This is the time of Israel's exile. For many years, Israel was not, they were the children of Israel. They were not in their rightful place or in their purposed land. They did not live there. In fact, they were attacked, and all the people were brought to Babylon, where they were enslaved and lived for many years far beneath their purpose. There were several of the Bible books that were written while they came out of that time that Israel was in exile. Books like Daniel, books like Nehemiah was when they were coming out of of exile, and Nehemiah was working to rebuild the wall and rebuild their land. But they spent 70 years in Babylon, in exile. And it was a very challenging time because these are people whom God has spoke about, people that God has purposed for great things, people whom God has said, you know what, you are my people, and I want you to live in a promised land, and I want you to have my very best. And they hear those memories, they hear the echoes of those words reverberating in their ears daily, but they're not living that. They are living as slaves. During this 70 years, the king of Babylon was a man named Belshazzar. And he has this supernatural experience. The Bible says that a hand appears and begins writing on the wall. This is not a natural man. This is not a human being. You have to imagine the king Belshazzar is in one of his beautiful, ornate royal rooms, and sitting there perhaps on his throne, and out of the wall over here appears a hand, and it begins to write on the wall. You've heard the phrase somewhere in life that says the handwriting on the wall. This is where that comes from. He sees this, and this is what he sees written on the wall. Many, many tekel upharsin. Doesn't mean anything to you and I, and in fact, it didn't mean anything to him. He didn't know what it meant, and so he began calling his astrologers. He began calling all of his wise men. He began calling the soothsayers. He called every spiritual guru that lived in the land, and no one could interpret the writing. No one knew what it meant. His wife somehow is aware of Daniel, who is one of these Israelites that is in exile. He's a spiritual young man. He's a godly young man. I think he might be able to interpret the writing on the wall. And the king has offered a lavish reward. Anyone that can interpret this, I'm going to make them great in the kingdom. I have all of these gifts and riches for them, if they can only tell me what the handwriting on the wall means. And Daniel is summoned. He comes in and rejects all of the rewards. He says no to all of the gifts, but in fact, I can interpret what it says. Daniel, chapter 5, verses 26 and 27. This is what these words mean. God has numbered the days of your reign. That's what the first part means. King God has numbered the days of your reign. I think that is important because whether you're a king or a truck driver or a school teacher or a stay-at-home mom or a business owner, whether you sell insurance or whether you sell clothing, whether you put on tires for a living or whether you pave roads, it doesn't matter what you do. All of us have numbered days. All of us have numbered days. We're living every day not knowing what number we're on. Living every day not knowing when, not knowing how, not knowing from which direction death is going to come, but all of us are living numbered days. God has numbered the days of your reign and brought it to an end. And he says, you have been weighed on the scales and found wanting. That's what's on the wall, the handwriting on the wall. God has numbered the days of your reign. You have been weighed on the scales and have been found wanting. I know that sounds rather ominous and it sounds rather heavy, and for the purpose of this teaching today, I hope it will challenge you at least to some degree, because that's where we are in this new year. What is the balance of our days? What is the balance of my life? I know I'm busier than I've ever been. I know I'm doing more than I've ever done. I know my to-do list is longer and fuller than it ever has been. But is anything that I'm doing counting? Is anything that I'm doing making a difference? Is anything that I'm doing of significance in my life? And I know that's very challenging to hear. It's very challenging for me to say, because I have to live through this same filter. What I know, my calendar is full. I know I get to the end of the week and say, whew, I'm exhausted. But what did I really accomplish? I want to make sure that if I'm spinning my wheels, that they're spinning in the right direction. I want to make sure that if I'm exerting energy, that it's not wasted energy, but it's things that are going to count in my life. Because the Bible still says that only what you do for Christ is going to last. Those are the things that count. Are you saying, Pastor Darrell, we can't go on vacation? No, you need to go on vacation. You say, we can't take a day off? No, you need to take a day off. This is hopefully what this message is going to inspire you to do, to really measure your life, to really read the handwriting on the wall, to take inventory and say, you know what? I am not interested in wasting a year. I'm not interested in living just in the same rut or in the same stale, dry place that I've lived in for the last several years. I want my life to count for something. I want my life to produce something. I want it to yield something. I want something to come out of all of this exhaustion that I feel all the time and this hectic chaos that it seems I'm living in. I want it to matter, and I want to achieve something in my life that counts. That's what I want to do. So it's a good opportunity to weigh our own lives. Not to see how much you weigh, because that's depressing. But to weigh our own lives. To see if we are in balance. You know why? Because there are consequences to being out of balance. We literally pay for being out of balance. If your tires get out of balance, they start wearing uneven. I have a lot of experience in this department. I don't know what it is, but I go through tires, seems like all the time. And it's always some issue. It's always some minor issue, some minor reason. And before you know it, you're paying for for being out of balance. When you're out of balance, it literally sucks the life out of you, and there is nothing fresh. There's nothing good. There's nothing current. You don't feel any excitement about waking up in the morning and going about your day. No, you're dreading it. You're dreading it. Oh, I've got to go and live another day in my life. This is miserable. I don't like this. No, I want to get to the place in my life, and for you to get to the place in your life, that even though it's early, even though it's dark outside, even though you haven't had 7.5 cups of coffee yet, there is something down deep inside of you that says, I am excited to be alive today, because I'm going to work hard, and I'm going to invest in my family, and I'm going to make a difference in someone's life. And when I get to the end of this day, my brow will have sweated, my clothes will stink probably, but I'll get to the end of this day and I will feel so good knowing that my life has counted for something. I need to give you some ways that you will know if your life is out of balance. I need to talk to you about some of these consequences of an out of balance life. Here's the first one. If you're taking notes or if you're typing them into your phone, I want you to get these, because I think if you'll study back over these, if you'll sit with these in your quiet time, I really believe that God will speak to your heart, not just this week, but about this entire year. But here's one of the consequences of an out of balance life. The risk of sinful choices increases. It's what happens when my life is out of balance. Because when my resistance is down, when I'm tired, when I'm exhausted, my resistance is down. And when my resistance is down, I don't make the best choices for my life. When I'm depleted, I have a hard time discerning right from wrong. When I don't have any spiritual strength in my life, the word unstable comes to mind. We get in an unstable place when we are depleted, when we are exhausted, when we are overdue for good rest. Yes, the risk of sinful choices increases. The reality is, when you leave here today, you're not usually going to trip over sin in the parking lot of the church. No, you're strong. You're leaving here renewed. Ooh, I'm so glad they sang my song today. Man, that preacher, he came right down my row. And man, I just feel good today. That was helpful. I needed that in my life. No, the enemy's not going to mess with you. Not going to mess with you. He's going to wait until you are completely exhausted. He's going to wait until you are run down in your body. He's going to wait until your mind has had a day that it is so stressed out that you find yourself saying, I don't care if I could just get out of this mess. If I could just get out of my currents, that's when the enemy comes in with other choices and thoughts that grass is greener on the other side. Waits until we are exhausted. Jesus said it this way in Luke 21, in verse 34. He said, be careful, or your hearts will be weighed down. And dissipation, or a slow evaporation, drunkenness, and the anxieties of life, and that day will close on you unexpectedly like a trap. That's what Jesus said. You have to be careful. Be careful, or your hearts will be weighed down with dissipation. It'll just be this slow evaporation in your life. What does that mean? That means there's more going out than is coming in. That means there's more being expended than there is being received. You got to make sure, even if you're serving the church, even if you're doing good things, you got to make sure that you make a spiritual pit stop and you get refueled and you get tanked up and you get what you got to make sure there's not more going out than is coming in your life. Because if not, Jesus said you have to be careful, and the anxiety of life. Some of you know exactly what I'm talking about. The anxieties of life. Your anxiety may be different than mine. Your challenge may be different than mine. My struggle may look different than yours, but the anxieties of life will close in like a trap. Like a trap. And it's no fun to be trapped in anything. Let me tell you another consequence of an out of balance life. Our emotions are inconsistent. You ever feel this way? You feel like you're just an emotional roller coaster. One minute you're up, and the next minute you're down. I'm sure your kids could tell you all about it. One minute your mood is great, and the next minute you're just a terror to live with. Your emotions are inconsistent. It happens in an out-of-balance life. Chances are, when I'm in a hurry, it's easier for me to get angry. Chances are, when I'm behind, when I'm out of balance and my schedule is out of balance and my to-do list is out of balance, it's easier to become short-tempered when I'm living a hurried lifestyle. Job 9 and 25 says, my days go by faster than a runner. They fly away without my seeing any joy. So my days are running, flying past me, and then they're gone, and I haven't seen any joy. That's how I get to the place, and I realize, wait a minute, I've lived a month, and it's a blur. I've lived a year, and it's like it was only a few weeks. What's happened? My days are flying past me. My days are running past me, and I'm missing my life because of my hurried life. I realize that oftentimes we use schedule as a coping mechanism. If we can get busy, 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 then we don't have to think. We don't have to face. Am I too soon as the pastor to get in your business? I don't want to bother anybody on this Sunday morning, but sometimes we busy ourselves so that we don't have to deal with or face or come to realize, or we busy ourselves to be gone so much that by the time we get home, our kids are in bed and we don't have to deal with them, and our wife is already sacked out and we don't have to listen to her. We just make sure that we're busy, busy, busy. But can I tell you, sir, can I tell you, ma'am, that that will catch up to us, and it will and already is costing us. Missing my life because of my hurried life. Here's another consequence of an out-of-balance life. I'm less productive. That seems so foreign because I can tell you how busy I am. I can tell you how much I have going on, but I foolishly think that by doing more, I accomplish more. And it's not true. You only accomplish more when you're working with a sharp edge, because a dull axe means that you're working twice as hard. You're not accomplishing as much. Proverbs 21:5 says, careful planning puts you ahead in the long run. Hurry and scurry puts you further behind. Proverbs 19:2 says, a person in a hurry makes mistakes. I can witness to that. I can attest to that. If I'm not careful, I'm less productive if my life is out of balance. Here's another one that's very important. I end up empty inside. When my life is out of balance, I end up empty inside. This is huge because we get to the end of the day after working so hard and we think, for what? Why am I doing this? What am I accomplishing? I'm empty inside. My life seems to be void of meaning and of purpose. I'm struggling to find significance. And I'm telling you, a man and a woman that do not know their significance, those are people that fall into the traps of sin and wrong choices and mistakes. And families that fall apart and marriages that crumble because I feel empty inside. And then I start grabbing anything and anyone who can somehow put something back in to me. I thought this would satisfy me, but it didn't. Psalm 39:6 says, we are merely moving shadows, and all our busy rushing ends in nothing. Because here's a life truth. Burnout doesn't come from too much activity. It comes from too many activities that have no purpose. I got to make sure that my life matters. That's why I'm so pumped about last Sunday evening. If you were a part of our team church rally, I think I'd put out on social media that we had 109 people that were in that rally. It actually was 113 people that were a part of our team church rally. And it was a time for 113 people to say, yes, I want to give some of my time. I want to volunteer some of my time. I may be only able to do it once a month. I may be able to do it once a week. I may be only able to do this every now and then, but I want to make sure that I am a part of something that is bigger than me, that something that I can invest myself into, because I know that when I serve God's house, I will not leave empty. I will not leave feeling like I have wasted my time, if you're new here, if you're looking for something to do, if today is your first time to join us in worship, let me encourage you. Find out about Team Church. How can I get involved in what's happening in this house? Because I promise you, every minute that you invest into God's house is only going to fill you up. It's only going to bless your life. It's only going to strengthen your life. Whatever you do for God, it absolutely will last. And here's the final consequence of an out-of-balance life, and this is probably the most important of all, but I can't hear God when my life is out of balance. I can't hear God. I don't know where God is. I don't know what it is that God is trying to do. I can't hear God. And come on, folks, isn't that what really matters? Isn't my life blessed of God what really matters? Isn't my life anointed of God what really matters? Isn't my life full of God's presence and full of God's Spirit what really matters? Is everything else I'm giving the best of me to? Is everything else that I'm giving the best of my time to? Is everything else that I'm giving the best part of my energy to? If all of that is so important, why can't I hear from God? Psalm 46 and 10 says, "Be still." You've got to get in a quiet place sometimes. You got to schedule time for you. You got to block it out. Be still and know that I am God. He's saying, if I can get you quiet long enough, I'm gonna prove to you that I'm God. I'm gonna show you that I'm God. I'm gonna allow you to experience me in a fresh way. In a new way. I'm going to allow something supernatural to happen in your life, that there is no doubting. There is no doubting that I am God in your life. So how do I catch my breath? I'm running. I'm exhausted. I'm living in this managed chaos, crazy, hectic life. How do I catch my breath? How do I get to a place that I say, all right, finally, here I am. Here I am in a place where I can finally get things back into alignment. I can get things back into right place. I can get to a place. Here's what Jesus ultimately said in Mark chapter 6 and verse 31, he said, then, because so many were coming, this is the context of the story, because so many were coming and going, they did not even have a chance to eat. Listen, if I am too busy to eat, I am too busy. I got to make sure I'm eating. You can smile, that's all right. We're so busy, we don't even have time to eat with our families, eat with our spouses, eat. We're just running through drive. We don't even have time. And Jesus said, this is the answer. Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. That's what you need to do. That's how you're going to catch your breath. This is how you are going to sustain. This is how you are going to get to a place of fulfilled, filled up, full, strengthened, spiritually renewed. Come with me to a quiet place and let me give you some rest. Let me show you how to rest. Here's what Jesus is saying in practical, actionable terms. Because it wouldn't be fair for me to say, you know what? You need to just go get some quiet time away and just let God give you some rest. You don't even know how to rest. You don't even know how to spell rest. You don't even know what rest looks like. You don't know what that means. So I think Jesus is breaking this down. And I want to help you with some language that may give some direction. I think, number one, we have to stop the constant push for more. At some point, we have to stop buying into the lie that more is better. We have to stop pushing for more. You know, the average American spends 137% of their income. You know that's too much, right? You know that's way out of balance, right? 137% of their income. Why? Because we need more. We don't have enough. The house is not big enough. The closet is not full enough. We don't have enough toys, enough hunting equipment. We don't have enough. I'm not preaching against things, but you know what? I'm also not trying to keep up with anybody. I'm also not trying to impress anyone. Not trying to do something or spend something just so that I can be a part of some group or some clique or some huddle somewhere that says this is what I have to do. No, I refuse that. Stop the constant push for more. That's where I'll find some extra time. That's where I'll find some rest. That's where I'll find some relief in my life. Ecclesiastes 4:6 says, it is better to have only a little with peace of mind than be busy all of the time. It's better to have less. I could take you to a time in our lives, my own family, when we're so busy, and Kristen was spending probably 4 hours a day in traffic, just mind-boggling, the craziness, missing far too much, missing too many family things, I'm eating over here and you're eating over there, and this is not working. This is not productive. This is not good for anyone. So stop pushing for more. Stop the reach for more and just say, you know what? I'm going to live by this scripture that says it's better to have only a little with peace of mind than be busy all the time. Sometimes it's better to have less so you can have more of the right things. Is this word helping anybody today? It's probably challenging you, and it may be bringing some sting in your world, but every single one of us need to get back into balance. Proverbs again, the book of wisdom, chapter 14 and verse 30. A heart at peace gives life to the body, but envy rots the bones. Proverbs 20 and 25 says it is a trap for a man to dedicate something rashly only later to consider his vows. I can't overcommit myself. I can't say yes to everything. I give you permission to use this word all year long. You know what that word is? No. No, I no. Will you go here? No. Can you do this? No. I can't. Just can't. No, I can't be there. I can't do that. I can't be a part of that. Now, number two is what Jesus is saying when he says, come with me to a quiet place. Here's what he's saying. Keep the Sabbath day holy. Keep the Sabbath day holy. I'm not interested in debating which day is the Sabbath day. I think in your life it can be any day. Jesus is our Sabbath. In the New Testament, I can find and have my own Sabbath day, but we violate this all the time. We get out of bounds on this all of the time. You've got to have time in your life when you come apart so that you don't come apart. You have to have time in your life when you pull back from everything and you turn off phones and you just say, you know what, I am going to rest. I'm going to just do something that just, you know, pleases me, just makes me happy today. Spend time with family, whatever it may be. If Sunday is your only day out of seven, you come to church, you worship, and then you race out of the building to go and see if you can burn the rest of the daylight hours working, doing. You ought to just stop. You ought to just go for a walk with your spouse. You ought to just go with your kids somewhere. You ought to just say, wait a minute, let me just rest. Let me just Let me just do what Sabbath means. It means to cease. It means to stop. Let me just stop. And I promise you the rest of my week is going to be better if I will keep the Sabbath holy. Here's the third thing. This is so important. It's so simple, and yet it makes such a difference in our lives. I need to stay close to Jesus. If my life is out of balance and my life seems to be running crazy and it's just this managed chaos all of the time, and I feel like I'm constantly rushing and just fighting, you know, for any peace of mind. I gotta stay close to Jesus, because this is a principle. This principle is in the Old and the New Testament. Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Verse 2, he makes me lie down in green pastures. He makes me. That generally starts out as, hey, you ought to slow down. Hey, remember me? Stop. You just missed another Sunday. Hey, I got something good. Come sit down. I see you burning out. I see you. All right, I tell you what, I'm going to make you sit down. And then all of a sudden, stuff's happening in our lives that we're like, what happened? Why is this happening? That devil, no, it probably wasn't even the devil. He makes me lie down in green pastures, leads me beside still waters, restores my soul, leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Because the reality is, if you get close to him, if you allow him to lead you, then things will change in your life. They will. That's not a negative. That's the best news you've heard all day. If you get close to Jesus, he is going to change things in your life. That's Old Testament. New Testament, Matthew 11, verses 28, 9, and 30. Come to me, Jesus, and all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart. You will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. But in order for it to happen, you got to get close to Jesus. It's the only way it works. Well, I tell you what, I'm just going to run. And when it's time to stop, God will stop me. I'm just going to go. And when my body tells me to quit, that's when I'll quit. No, you're playing roulette with your health. Get your life in balance. I love what Isaiah says. It says they were given rest by the Spirit of the Lord. They were given rest by the Spirit of the Lord. What? Yeah, God's Spirit gives me rest. Because Spirit, it's an English word that was translated. You and I understand it good, but in the original, it's Ruach. Not saying that correctly, I know, but it literally means the breath of God. Fresh air. They were given rest by the fresh air of the Lord. It's That's how God can change. That's how God can turn. That's how God can move. I want you to stand with me all over the building today. I feel God in this house. I know it's time.